So this is good. This is you. This is your sonorous radio voice.
My sonorous?
Sonorous.
I don't know that word.
Really?
Yeah.
It's an adjective that means mellifluous. No, or just like a...
Of course. I just wrote a whole funny scene in my head about someone who tries to explain a word
whether or not a word, you don't know.
More impressive words.
But it's a word about a voice that means it's round,
full
and
yep.
Rich.
Got it.
I believe.
It's good.
But now I've been doing all the talking, we haven't heard your voice, and the question was actually about yours.
What was the question?
Well, I want to hear your voice. Let's have some of your voice. That was the whole point.
Right. So just more test talking?
Just more voice, but more not me talking. You talking.
Me talking.
Yeah.
Okay. Sound test. Yeah. Check 1, 2, 3. Funniest scenes in the world. Gunner book tour promo. Take 1.
1,797.
It's the start of a long journey.
Long, long journey.
So this is me talking.
Okay.
I'm engaged in my diaphragm. More?
Okay, you're not engaged with me. You're just like saying stupid shit.
I don't know what you're asking. Is it just a sound check?
It's a sound check.
Okay, then just say sound check. I'm just talking.
Sound check.
Is that good? Sound check? Sound check more? What do you want me to read us? Here. Few in Hollywood know comedy like Gunner as a successful writer, actor, and director.
Okay, that's enough. Thank you. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Have we started?
Well, that was it. That was the beginning. Hello, everybody.
Okay.
Well, that's how you start your classes all the time.
Yes, that's true.
So then I decided to imitate you.
Fantastic.
Flattery, not okay. Steal. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is comedy writer, actor, director, and dog lover, Gunnar Rohrabacher.
Hello, everybody! That's how I actually do it.
That's how you do it. In the next hour, we're going to put Gunner on the hot seat and really make him sweat. Good thing you're taking some water.
Really? I just thought we were going to chat.
Oh, no. But okay. First, a message from our corporate overlords. This is also you. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is the very funny Hollywood entrepreneur, Gunner Rohrabacher. Hello, sir.
Hi, thank you.
It's always great to have you here.
It's exciting to be here.
I mean, it's only the second time. But
well, but this more than once.
It was great the first time, and it's going to be great the second time.
Fantastic.
Here's little Chester. Here, come on, you want to sit with me? No, you can't bite me. Look.
Chester wants to roughhouse right now.
No. Come here. Come here, monster. We're going to edit that part out.
Okay.
That's the beauty of editing.
He's literally full tilt. I want to play with my dad right now.
Sucker. No, you can't be barking. No, no, no. And now back to the show. Okay, everything's good. And now back to the show. You already did something I did not expect.
Which is?
I introduced you as, what did I say, when you writer, director, producer, entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And the one thing I thought you would say is that you're also the director of this school and you are the executive producer of this program.
Yeah.
But none of those are the reasons you're here.
No.
No. That's what I'm saying.
They're not. Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was going to be the opening. Like, I would say all these things about you and you would say, yeah, they're all true, but, you know, I also run the school. And I would say, yeah, but that's not why you're here. You're here because...
Yeah, but you're the host of the podcast, so I just, you know... I don't want to step on your through line.
You should step on it.
Okay.
No, that's the only important, interesting part of the show is when people mess me up.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think.
All right. Well, then I'm going to keep my eye on you.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Now, you're here because you usually laugh at my jokes, which is good for my ego.
Okay. Well, that's...
That's the number one reason.
Good.
Now, people come on this show to promote stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think that there might be listeners that might respond in some positive way.
Perhaps there may be.
There perhaps may be. You have a book.
Yes, I do.
Yay.
So
tell us about your book.
I think the word we were looking for, just to be clear, author.
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 Author. Also. Is this the first book that you've published?
It is.
I mean, that. And so now I just never thought of this. The difference between a writer and an author is an author publishes a book.
I don't know if that is the dictionary definition, but it makes sense to me.
Right. If you don't, nobody says I was the author of that screenplay or I was the author of that television ad.
True. You
or
don't
the
really...
author of that Bazooka Joe bubblegum cartoon that's in those little pink things. They don't say I was the author of that. You say I was the...
That would be precious.
Author of a
is
novel.
Is the word I'd use if somebody said I was the author of a Bazooka Joe gum wrapper story joke.
Who writes those?
I don't know that person.
Don't you ever want to know who writes those?
I don't.
Okay, it's only me. Moving on. So your book.
So we should maybe say the title. Since
of which
we're,
you're an author, yes, it's called.
Because I wrote a book. Yeah. It's called The Funniest Scenes in the World, Volume 1.
Yeah, original TV scenes for actors to practice, workshop, and shoot reels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, I did a little research.
It's good. That's good
the,
hosting.
That's the official subtitle.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about that because I think that that little description that you just gave, I think it's important because, yes, I like to think the scenes are funny. They've been tested, you know, in front of agents, managers, casting people. Because they have, many of them, not all of them, have been performed live.
Yes, that was actually one of the things I wanted to mention. Don't skirt through that fast because – students have been using these scenes for a while in these workshops, and people comment on them. That's why they're in the book.
Yeah, that's a right? large part of the
like
reason
casting
why.
People are like, that's hilarious. Where did you get that scene? Is it from a show? Something, right? That's how they got in here.
Yeah, Actors Comedy Studio. My business partner and I, Lauren Bertoni, have produced many live showcases that we've done here in the school, outside at larger theaters, and then We've had industry professionals, casting agents, managers come in as guests for workshops and classes. So in a variety of different conditions, whether it be like an audition setup or actors working in pairs performing live, these scenes have been performed. And the reaction has been very, very positive. And many of them, you know, upon seeing the scene, immediately said, that's very funny. Where did you get that scene? You know, because when you work in casting, that's what you see sides and scenes all day. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're working in TV pilots, et cetera, you see so much of the new stuff that comes out each season. So it was very exciting and very flattering, you know, to have people say, wow, that's as good as any other scene I've seen in a workshop.
So we know they're better. Fun. People have laughed already.
Yes.
And now when somebody says, hey, where did you get that scene? You could say, my book, I'm an author. Now, one of the things, why does the world of actors, why do we need this book?
Excellent question. There aren't a lot of scene books for actors that are original scenes that are written in the style of television. So the actual book is formatted with, you know, in Hollywood we'd say final draft formatted script, but a professionally formatted script. So even the text within the book looks like, you know, a shooting script would look.
And so for people on the radio who can't see it, so when you say formatted for television, that means the whole book works horizontally like your television screen and you have to read it kind of top to bottom.
No. That's ludicrous.
Okay.
It means like a lot of...
Well, I'm on brand.
A lot of scene books, well, you're a clown.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of scene books that traditionally you'd be able to purchase are just, they look like playbooks, you know, so it's got the character's name and then it just reads from left to right and there's, you know, not much space in between. So these are all spaced for ease of use. And, you know, I just wanted it in all ways to, you know, feel like you were working with a professional script. So they're all equally weighted, two-person scenes. And
some are gender neutral, some are age neutral, so you can mix and match them.
Yeah, I have students of all age ranges that study at Actors Comedy Studio, which is...
Including kids.
Including kids.
There's no kids. Are there kids scenes in this book? No.
No.
No, this is all for adults. Yeah.
Do we have...
Fuck
Lauren,
those kids.
Actually, Lauren, my business partner, is compiling her own scene book for kids because she specializes in teaching kids, and she's a certified studio teacher. Yeah. So we're...
I'm glad we're giving her a shout-out, by the way.
In advance.
To Lauren. No, just Lauren in general.
Yeah.
Because she's your partner here, and I wanted to make sure that we mentioned her and
oh.
said how great she is and how much we like her.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
Well, now like we're done with that. We can just never mention her again.
Let's no. I'll say like her and love her, and also this wouldn't be a thing unless I had a partner to do it with. Right. So that's she's important.
That's how it works.
And she's we're working on getting her published as well. So there will be a junior version of these books that she's working on. So it's we opened our own publishing company. It's called War Fox Publications. So we intend to keep rolling with this. There's actually volume two of this book is already done.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. We're just, you know, releasing it at a later time so each one can get its own attention and life into the world. Well, let's finish this first because there is an important
is there
point
one more
that
thing
I do.
To say about this?
Well, yes, just that if you go to the store, Actors in 2017.
Yes.
If you go to the bookstore or look for Scene Books on Amazon, I think we've kind of made the point, but it's I think this is very unique in the world because there are Scene Books for Actors are usually from scenes if they're from plays if they're original works, or they're compilations from movies that are much older. Some of the and I've done a lot of market research before publishing this, and literally on the bookshelves are sitting books that I bought 25 years ago when I was a newer actor, and they're literally the same books with the same scenes with featuring movies. You know, scenes from movies from the 80s, et cetera. And
Goonies.
I don't think Goonies
was
an
80s movie?
It definitely was.
Okay.
I don't know if it was in any of the scene books.
There are no scenes that people want to reproduce from Goonies?
I don't think so. Not for industry professional
use. Not for industry professional use, yeah.
So maybe not. Maybe. But I also encourage people to use these as shooting scripts.
Yeah.
And I think that is what's I'm hoping to be revolutionary.
For
I know it's
real.
It's not humble to say that, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I don't see a lot of books, you know, where there are current scenes with current references that are equally weighted for two people, where the author is saying, "Yeah, go ahead and use this as a shooting script for your reel."
Right.
You know, obviously, you can't take credit for having written them, but. Real footage is, you know, that's not necessarily proprietary. I would love to see the world filled with actors who need some real footage. And, you know, not everybody's cut out to be a writer.
You want to read one? Can we read one?
Do you want to do that? That would be
just, you know, see if we can make it sound funny.
Okay, let's do this one.
You know these. Do I know this one?
I don't know. We'll find out. I think we should read the one called Soulful.
Soulful.
Yeah, S-O-L-E. F-U-L.
See what you did there.
Is right.
Devin and Bryce. Now, who am I going to be?
I think you should be Bryce.
I should be Bryce.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
Because and I think you're a little bit kookier than I am.
Okay, and you're going to be Devin.
I'll be Devin.
So this could be gender neutral, right?
Yeah.
On both sides for, you know,
and
or Bryce could be.
I've seen a variety of ages performed as well, because you might think somebody who's an assistant position, you know, might be a kid, but I've seen older people do it, and then it's been hilarious.
Somebody does Bryce really well. What the hell's her name?
Darlene.
Darlene
Levin.
Is really good. I'm never going to be as good as she is with
Hodges.
Bryce.
Yeah, she is. Well, yeah, she killed it. So I'll read the stage directions.
Okay. Anything else I need to know? What archetype are you? What archetype am I? What do I need to channel here for Bryce?
All right. My archetype would be the dreamer. So I'm hopeful, desperate, optimistic. You would be eccentric. Mm-hmm. So you're odd, but shameless and outspoken and opinionated.
Shameless is the thing that I cue into here.
Awesome. Then
all
we'll
right.
run
you're gonna
with
read,
that.
You're going to read the – and I'm just going to read
– perhaps you might have a skewed sense of logic, as we'll see in this scene as well.
So I'm Bryce.
You are Bryce. All right. So we're in an interior hallway day. Devin is pacing me like a wild person. Bryce sits, worried. I can't believe you, Bryce. I can't believe you did that in front of the board of directors.
I was nervous.
Do you have any idea how humiliating that was for me?
I'm so sorry. I was also anxious.
How is that different from nervous?
Subtly.
What?
It's subtly different, but I don't want my sincere apology to be overshadowed by a semantics lesson.
Well, thank you so much for not correcting my grammar. Any ideas on how to save my job?
Wait. We don't know that you're fired. They just asked us to leave the room so they could discuss your future with the company.
Oh, I'm sure they're talking about what a long and fruitful association we'll have after you had a self-induced orgasm in front of the CEO of the Jet Step Sneaker Corporation.
My bad. You're probably thinking, I shouldn't have let Bryce assist me in pitching my new insole project to the board, and you're probably right.
Probably.
But as your assistant, I'm willing to let you make me the scapegoat entirely, since I did make two board members throw up and do a spit take. A third throw up her lunch onto the conference table.
Why did you do that, Bryce? Why did she just have lasagna?
You were talking about how the combined layer of neoprene and foam created a palpably different contact experience in the balls of your feet. There was something about the way you kept saying balls.
Clearly I should have just said metatarsal bone.
Bone wouldn't have been any better. And then you said, like a second skin, it has the power to create a whole new series of sensations throughout your body as you work up a sweat.
I was talking about running.
I realized that, but you did such a good job. You were so passionate. Pounding the ground, step by step. I promise you all that you'll never think of running as a punishment again. Just pure pleasure.
I was pitching.
You were on fire. It was sexy as hell. Pounding, punishment, pleasure. How was I supposed to stop myself?
I am not responsible for what you did in there.
Your words made me start to visualize what it would be like to run and have sex at the same time. Oh, yeah. Daddy, who's my marathon man?
You're doing it again. Stop it.
Devin, I think I'm about to cross the finish line.
Bryce, pull it together for the love of Meg Ryan.
Words are powerful.
I just wanted you to run the PowerPoint presentation.
I know. But I think a couple of those suits are pretty turned on, too.
Bryce, nobody was horny in there but you. Do you understand that?
Maybe not entirely. I tend to project.
This is a disaster.
Fine! Tell them you fired me and save your crappy shoe job. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure I can save it.
Well, I'm just spitballing here, but if you're fired, you should get into phone sex because your voice is amazing.
I think we both need to look for employment elsewhere. You're an idiot.
That was mean. But I am willing to overlook it if you will let me have half an hour alone with those sneakers.
Ugh. Fine. End of scene!
Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba, boom. So, yeah, I can imagine that being a sitcom scene between a boss and an underling, and yeah.
It's a straightforward premise, gone horribly awry.
Which is what sitcoms do all the time.
Right. Yeah. And then the characters get emotional and offended and,
Yeah.
So, yeah, in each one of the scenes, I tried to capture the basic tenets of, like I said, a half-hour comedy and the tropes that they trade on. They're, even if they're silly, like this one,
sure.
Somebody had pretended to have, an orgasm because a presentation got too intense.
Wait, I pretended? No, I really.
Oh, you got there.
I really, something was happening for me. Yeah.
I felt it.
Yeah, okay.
Across the
table. No, I mean the character, me.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't pretending in that boardroom.
Well, right. The character was not.
The character was really there.
Now,
what you said, even if they're silly, or that's the thing about sitcoms. The stakes are not high. Like in a lot other kinds of things, films and plays, the stakes are as high as you can make them, right? Because we want the drama. But in sitcom, a lot of times the stakes are super low.
Well,
like
I don't know.
Everyday stakes, normal kinds of things.
Sure, they can be an exploration of the mundane. Yeah. But in the instance of that scene, as ridiculous as it was, somebody's career was at stake.
Yeah.
So to me, that is
right.
High stakes. It's not my life, but my career ending. This person really thought that they, had a great idea for a sneaker and made a presentation to a CEO. If I failed in that environment, that would be awful.
But it's a sitcom, so you're not going to lose your job, and we'll all be fine by the end of the 23
minutes. People lose their jobs on sitcoms. Ask Chandler Bing.
That's true. Well, that was part of his. He was perennially not employed properly. I mean, that was
right. He was a dreamer, which was also my archetype.
Okay. So, all right. I see. Now, there's one other thing I want to ask you about.
You sure?
Before we move on, what is it that makes the multi-cam TV sitcom such an enduring form? I mean, it's its own thing. It's special. We never give it a lot of credit, but it's a special thing. I know you believe that.
I give it a lot of credit, and I think in general, the medium has an incredible fan base. But then it also does get thrown under the bus a lot. It's constantly talked about as it's going to be over, it's going to die. It's, you know, young people don't really watch it anymore. We're used to kind of single cam stuff. Hearing the audience laughter is weird to me. So horses for courses, you know, watch whatever you like. But the reality is, and well, I'll go to the heart of your question. What's different about it is it's the intersection of theater and technology. Mm-hmm. That's the simplest way to answer. You know, they used to be called teleplays.
Right.
And for a reason, back in the day, so like All in the Family, you would see on the credits, teleplay by, and then Norman Lear, the name of the writer, because they understood that they were putting a camera on theater.
Right.
And to me, as an actor and a writer and director, nothing is more magical than that. It's you know, it's the best of both worlds. It's, you know, combining, you know, the two different broadcast mediums. We have live performance and then broadcast through a screen. So I think they're incredibly special. If, you know, if you anyone who hasn't had the chance to go see one live, I strongly encourage them to do it. It feels great to watch it. They are super fun. And you really see how challenging and, you know, difficult it is to work in that environment and have it be seamless. It seems like, you know, well, it seems easy and like anybody can do it. But the reality is for the writers and the actors, there's a lot of pressure because if something doesn't get a laugh, the writers huddle up and rewrite lines and then give them to the actors who are immediately expected to turn it around and try out new dialogue and new jokes.
On the fly.
On the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really
Which
challenging.
Yeah, they never do in – well, I mean, you could do that in a film also, but the stakes are different. It's not a live audience and –
Right, and a lot of people are irritated by that laughter. I always try to, you know, mention this whenever I have conversations of this sort. They're irritated by the laughter because they think it's fake and phony, and it's not.
It's not.
It's the real – there's like 300 to 500 people sitting in that audience, and they're really laughing at those jokes. And if the jokes don't work, then they write new jokes to get the audience to laugh. And I'm not saying, you know – it's maybe not sweetened here or there depending on the shows, but they work really hard to get real laughs. And generally speaking, those laughs are real. And then the other thing that I always say when I talk about multicams is they're so financially lucrative, it's unbelievable. With respect to all kinds of television shows, because I watch all kinds of television shows.
Yeah, but the half-hour sitcom thing, that's what cranks out. That's what makes money.
Right. I mean, you know, Big Bang Theory is the most financially lucrative television show on. Yeah. Whatever else awards, anything else is won. How important House of Cards is. We can talk about Game of Thrones. You know, Big Bang Theory is worth more money than all of them.
Yeah.
And in many cases, you could pick 10 shows, and I'd say combined those 10 shows aren't as worth worth as much money as one multicam sitcom. And you make a great point, and I've traveled to other countries to teach comedy. I was in Dublin, Ireland earlier this year, and it was almost like I had to shake them awake and say, you could make your own comedy, you know. You don't have to rely on America, because globally, the world really relies on America to produce comedy in particular. Nobody else, everybody has their own regional comedy. I'm not saying they don't. But our comedy is so universal and travels so well. Really, the rest of the world doesn't make sitcoms. Other countries who could.
And they could.
Don't really make half-hour comedies because they're so happy with what we're producing. So I think that's important
to
know.
That's good. All right, let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want to do with this, but, you know, this show is about the dark side of comedy. I mean, I say that every week, right?
Yeah.
And then guests come on, and I try to poke them or prod them and get them to admit some things that they never admitted to anybody else or, you know, complain about. And then I make fun of them. But you're special because you know me. Mm-hmm. And I just was wondering if you find anything that you want to make fun of me about or give me a hard time about, like, you're the guy, you're the guest who's going to do it. So you want to give me any crap about anything? You want to tell me I'm
so? Are you reversing the paradigm?
Yeah, if you want to if you want to find some weaknesses and tease me about anything, you know, feel free.
I don't know. That's not my jam.
Well, just take your time. No pressure. I'm just saying, like, we got another, I don't know, 40 minutes worth of time. If you find some things you want to tease me about.
Okay. I'll put that on the back burner and let it
stew. Any faults that you want to bring up that then I'm embarrassed about, and then we find a way to laugh about them, or you can laugh at me about them. That's all fair.
Well, it's not that I can't be an a-hole. But it kind of goes against my philosophy of tolerance and acceptance. I know it's exhausting.
Values.
I'm not a saint by any stretch. But
all right, you're not going to give me any difficulty today. Fine, let's move on. Well, you recently had your first ever prostate exam.
He's mad at me. I did. Yeah. I posted it on social media.
That's why the world I'm bringing it up.
Should know.
Why did you post it on social media?
Because it was funny. Because what I posted...
Okay, what's funny about a prostate exam? See, this is the show. This is the heart of the show. Go ahead.
Okay, what's funny about it is it's a rite of passage, when it comes to chronological age, really. And, I turned 49 just a couple weeks ago in May. And, I'm glad that I'm still here. And I'm proud and alive. I mean, think of the people, because it's something that happens around, the age, somewhere in the area of the age.
Yeah, 50. Once you get to 50, they're like, all right, we got to start to do this.
Right.
Yeah,
your doctor just kind of like throws it at you.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, okay, this is it. Just I reflected on a second. But I thought, it's one awkward moment. But the part that's funny to me and that I celebrate is, well, I made it. I'm still here. It was, I had my first prostate exam today, and then I just did it in dialogue form. Doctor, do you mind? Gunner, bring it. And that's actually what I said to him. He didn't actually think it was funny at all. I thought
that's
it was hilarious.
That's the funniest part, yeah. So you're laughing and giggling, bent over the table, and he's like, oh, my God.
Oh, laying on the table was just sideways. And it's not a finger anymore, by the way. It was something else.
Okay, now I got two questions. What else was it?
I don't know, because I was looking the other way.
That's a bad sign. No. If somebody's going to stick something up your ass, you should know what it is going up there.
Well,
That's a rule.
That's not a rule I have.
Okay. Evidently not.
We're different men.
Clearly.
No, I thought that's what it would be. That was my understanding. Yeah. But it was, it was medical. It was legit. He's a good doctor.
Sure.
But it was...
Casting aspersions on your health insurance. You were just...
See,
I don't lay down, and I don't get a finger alternate. I think I'm getting a finger. As far as I know, it's a finger. One, right?
Okay. Well,
and yeah, I'm sure there's many ways to do it.
I think there's a teaching moment here for both of us, which
I hope not.
perhaps we should ask what's going to happen before it happens.
A learning moment.
Because what happens when you assume.
I just bend over and think of England, You know that whole thing? Was that from World War II? Women not wanting to have sex with their husbands, and they would say, just close your eyes and think of England. You're doing it for your country.
Would think so.
You've heard that.
I have heard the phrase. Right. Don't know the origin, but that would make sense. It's a very dutiful kind of mind frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, thanks for bringing that up.
All right. Prostate exam. Well, that was just on my list. Mm-hmm. What else? We got a shout out to your partner, Lauren Bertoni. Oh, here's something interesting. This building has a great history with a Liberace.
It does.
Can you tell us a little about tell us because that's a great story.
Sure.
About Liberace here.
Yeah. He used to own the building and he used to live here. So we're at 7461 Beverly Boulevard.
Between La Brea and Fairfax.
Correct.
Yeah.
So just, for context, because some people, people can listen from all over the world, but if you're in LA.
They can.
You know this building
yeah.
for sure if because. you've ever. Well, because it's the only five-story building on this stretch of La Brea. So even if you don't think you know this building if you drive around here at all.
You're like, oh, that one, sure.
Right, exactly. It's red brick, and five stories is not particularly tall, but everything else is only two stories.
Right.
On, you know, from Fairfax to La Brea till you get to the Beverly
So he
Center.
Owned this building. He lived upstairs.
He lived upstairs.
And what years were these?
I don't know the exact dates.
But I mean, like, was he a young guy, an old guy, middle-aged guy?
Pretty sure it would be in the 70s.
Okay.
But
he was already 50 years old by that time, right?
Is
that
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just checking.
I would think. So, yeah, there is a penthouse on the top of this building. There's a swimming pool on the top of this building, which a lot of people don't know. So it's a live work space because there's also a couple of bathrooms up there with, you know, showers. There's a small kitchen area. But anyway, it's used for, you know, it's leased for work at this point, so nobody lives up there now. But yeah, the my original landlord bought the building directly from him, so that was cool. So when Lauren and I signed the lease, and they were friends, actually. So Lauren and I got an autographed picture of Liberace upon signing our lease for Actors Comedy Studio, and it just seemed like fitting and funny. And one of the other stories I can tell you, a brief bit of trivia.
Yeah, let's have something salacious. Any salacious Liberace stories?
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Okay, salacious.
You know, when he was living up here at the height of his fame and past the point that he cared if anyone really knew if he was gay or not, he would have...
Because he was so good at hiding it. Yeah.
Well, you know, ask the housewives in the 50s.
I understand.
And they were like, people, oh, we love him. We want to marry him.
Yeah.
He would have two hunky guys trimming the hedges out front on the sidewalk wearing nothing but Speedos. So that's as salacious as I have.
That's good though. They didn't even need to be trimmed. The hedges didn't need trimming. I mean, he just wanted guys out front in Speedos. Anytime he came in or went out, uh-huh. or he had guests come, he wanted. I like that.
Oh yeah, those walls have stories up there.
I'm sure they do. Oh, I realize I really messed something up today.
What did you do?
It's something I didn't do.
What didn't you do?
Well, you know, I have this thing about pie.
Yeah.
Pies.
Yeah.
And letting people hit me in the face with a pie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said a year ago that I could hit you in the face with a pie.
Yes.
And I imagined that today would have been a great day. Did you think about that?
I haven't thought about it in a while. I have thought on and off about the fact that I've given you permission to surprise me with a pie in my face.
Well, today would have been a great day.
Uh-huh.
And I forgot until it was too late and I'm unprepared and I don't have a pie.
Oh.
Were you expecting a pie today?
Are you punking me? No, I'm nervous.
No.
No, because I also have to shoot some video stuff later today. So maybe it's good because I don't have another shirt.
All right. Well... I did show up at Christmas time with a pie, and you were sick that day, and I had to have Henny hit Jason in the face with a pie.
So does that nullify my pie? Since it
absolutely
actually...
not.
Okay,
don't worry.
All right,
we're still going to get you in. It was just that I came here and I had the technology all set up, mm-hmm. and you were out sick that day, and then.
Weird.
I said, does anybody want to get hit in the face with a pie? And people looked around at each other, and Jason said, okay. Okay, yeah. And then I said, well, who wants to do it? And Henny was like, me. You know how she is.
Chomping at the bit. All right.
You didn't see there's like a little video thing of it, little video clip.
I think I did.
Yeah. No, my favorite part is that she hits Jason in the face with a pie, and then she immediately looks at me to see if she did it right.
Is there a wrong way?
Well, you know, it was her first time, so. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
Hmm?
True or false? Did you have an imaginary friend?
Oh,
no.
No?
No.
No
imaginary friends?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
You seem like a person who might have an imaginary friend.
No, I'm the person who disliked children who had imaginary friends.
You disliked children who had imaginary. So what you could tell me about that? But you knew kids that had imaginary friends and you thought they were boobs.
Yeah, and you know, it was also something that was depicted on TV, you know, a lot. You know, like you'd see a show and the kid would be like, there'd be an episode about their imaginary friend or whatever. I thought there were boobs. That's a good word.
You thought they were, yeah, idiots.
I thought that was foolish.
You thought that's foolish. Like, what kind of person wants or needs, yeah. You're judgmental about it.
Look, it seemed desperate to me. when I was little,
I'm just imagining you at 5 or 7 years old, like watching me, like, no, that kid's off on the wrong track. Seems desperate. Feels codependent.
That's what I thought. That's what it seemed like to me. I was like, I would think things like, why don't you just like yourself enough? Why aren't you enough? Why do you have to add somebody who's not there?
Gotta have an imaginary friend. Yeah.
So, I used my imagination, but it wasn't to create somebody who wasn't there.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. That answers two questions at once, because my first question was that, but then the other question was, did I ever ask you this question before? And it would have been...
Yeah, I think we'd both remember.
Yeah, I would have remembered, because as a question, it just doesn't work for you.
It's funny. I had a big reaction to that question. And you started it off as a statement too.
Well, that's just because I'm kind of a dick sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I don't. Yeah, there's another one of your statements that doesn't go anywhere. I don't.
Come on.
I mean, I really don't.
Confess.
Confess to what? I don't have a ritual.
Let's move on. All right, so there's another question that just doesn't work for you. All right. Okay. Well, how about this question? We have this business with the pie thing, right?
Yeah.
And then I usually ask a question of my guests. If you could receive a pie from anybody, living or dead throughout history, you know, you could... Yeah, who would you want? Some famous person or anybody aside from me. Yeah, if you could have your choice of anyone to hit you in the face with a pie, who would you want to be hit in the face with a pie from?
Belinda Carlisle.
Belinda Carlisle from the Go-Go's?
Yes.
Tell me about that. What? I've gotten a lot of answers. Some... weird, some esoteric, some intellectual, but not the Go-Go's. Why? Yeah.
I love her. I mean, we just all have people that we just grew up. Why are you laughing? She's just one of the people that I love. The day I saw a Go-Go's video on MTV when I was younger, I think I fell deeply in love with Belinda Carlisle. Mm-hmm. I've met her twice.
That's pretty good.
Right?
No, I mean, for somebody that you're like, woo! Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of them was recently, right? Didn't you go to see the Go-Go's in the past year?
Maybe a year-ish ago. Yeah. At the Greek. Shout out to Doris Davis, my friend that I've met her with. I think she is one of the most stunning... physically beautiful women ever. I just love their music. You know, the Go-Go's are iconic and they don't get enough credit, just since we're talking
about
it.
They don't get enough credit.
Right? Because, you know, they're compared with, like, maybe the Bengals as the top two all-girl bands. The Bengals did write music, and I love them too, but they didn't really write any of the songs that they're actually known for.
Okay.
They were all written by other people, and just for whatever it's worth, they were written by mostly men. Prince and other people, which is no big deal. But I'm just saying, there's not, and it kind of still blows my mind, though. Think about it, because they were famous in the 80s, right?
Yes.
They actually even were together in the 70s.
Yeah.
There's not been another band of all women who have wrote their own music and are known for writing and playing their own music, and it's 2017. So
yeah, 30 plus years later.
30 plus years. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying it hasn't existed, but, you know, they haven't, like, risen to, you know, being commonly known in notoriety. So they've done something that's never been matched. So you can laugh at my pick at Belinda Carlisle, but you did laugh. So don't say, like, I'm not laughing, because you laughed.
But I'm not laughing at your choice. It just threw me for a loop because I didn't. I don't know what I didn't. I don't know what I expected, but that somehow was out of the box for me.
Maybe the word would actually be obsessed. But obsessed. I am obsessed with Belinda Carlisle.
Obsessed with Belinda Carlisle.
I just love her. I love everything about her. And she's surpassed expectations the couple of times I had a chance to meet her.
She's nice.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm your biggest fan. And she said, I'm so happy to know that.
I didn't say that.
You exuded it. She exuded it back and everything was happy.
I exuded it. Well, the last show was their farewell tour. So actually what I said to her was I was sitting right next to her and having my picture taken, and I turned and said, thank you for everything that you've given the world, and I know you're going to kick ass tonight. And I think that actually meant more to her than I'm a big fan.
Yeah. What's going on right now at Actors Comedy Studio?
So I'm writing an acting book for the studio, so it's great to have the scenes in the scene book.
And so the acting book is going to kind of solidify the method that you use in the classes all the time.
And correct, and summarize our curriculum.
Got it.
So it's got comedy archetypes, how to break down scripts the way a writer would.
Yes.
And, you know, in the simplest form, my value as a teacher, humbly speaking, I think is that I am a performer with a lot of performance experience and training, but I'm also a writer and a professional writer. So I look at scripts the way an industry writer would look at them.
Yeah.
So when I give feedback to actors, it's with that in mind.
Yeah.
If you're auditioning, you're applying for a job, and the person who's offering that job does absolutely have an idea in their head of what how to meet the requirements.
And in TV comedy, more than some other areas, the writers frequently are the producers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it applies to drama, too, especially in this age of television. In theater, actor is king or queen. In film, director is king or queen of the medium. In TV, it's the writer. And like you said, the executive producers are the ones hiring actors. So one of the messages that I try to consistently put out is, you could talk endlessly about acting in general, but when you talk about booking work in Los Angeles through the system of auditioning for casting or self-taping yourself, which is the world we actually live in now, writers hire actors.
We're running out of time. I like to anagram things.
Yeah.
Oh. You were like... That you gave me the look like you were in a foreign country and I was a guy selling some street food and I was trying to give it to you and you didn't really understand whether it was
animal. Well, maybe this is the thing that I'll tease you about. What? Just the statement, I like to anagram things, I guess I judged it. That would explain my
life. How did you judge it? Tell me what happened.
Like, what kind of person likes to anagram things? I think I thought, what a huge waste of time that is.
Well, lucky for you, all we have to waste is like another 6.5 minutes.
Not officially. Now. I just meant like on your own. You set me up. You said find something to tease you about. I think I found it.
Okay. Some people floss. I anagram.
It's called a callback.
It's called a callback.
Denzel.
That's good. You can tease me about that.
But anagrams, I'm totally into it. What have you got?
I haven't even mentioned you were here before. You are my first guest that has come back.
Oh, my gosh.
You're the first repeat guest. I mean,
okay.
You were my first guest.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm glad we're now calling you back.
But a year and a couple of months and one prostate exam later.
A year later.
Here I am.
There you go. So I don't know if we did this before.
I don't think we did.
Because I've gotten better at doing the show.
Oh, okay.
Presumably.
Yeah.
Maybe I should ask you that.
I believe you have.
Am I doing better than I did before?
Yes.
Have you been listening to the show?
No.
Well, there you go. And that concludes my performance review for the year. Thank you. We sign here.
I mean, I just have to be honest.
Honestly?
It's not for lack of love. It's just time.
You're in the majority. You're in good company. So I like to anagram things, and I started to anagram some stuff about you to see. And the question is, sometimes there are some hidden meanings revealed through anagrams. Or sometimes you just get some interesting things.
You know, odd wordplay, yeah.
Yeah, so like I first anagrammed your first two names, because you have two names, Gunner Todd.
Yeah, that's my whole name.
Yeah, Todd. I'm not sure. One of them was this one.
Grand Donut.
Yeah, do you relate to that at all? Grand Donut? Does that describe you in any way? I think I hit a nerve.
Maybe. I mean, you know, you just have to let your imagination attach to that. But
it's like a free association game. Do you get anything from Grand Donut?
Yeah. I mean, it's an important, silly thing. Donuts okay. are silly. Grand is, you know, elevated, important, or however you want to say. So, I tend to be in charge of things. I'm fairly accomplished in, you know, my chosen career, which is to teach comedy. So,
and if I had done my job, you would have been covered with sugary, sticky glaze and sprinkles. But I messed that part up.
So
see the pie thing. It would have fit right here, Grand Donut.
Right.
All right. How about the second one?
Tundra Dong.
Yeah, I think this has got to be a thing that Eskimos suffer from.
I've got Tundra Dong.
Yeah, doesn't it?
And I need to see a shaman.
Like, I imagine.
Made myself laugh.
You know, they have that thing when you're a kid, like if you lick a metal pole, your tongue can get stuck to it.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you're an Eskimo, you might have the same thing. Like, get up in the middle of the night, you go outside the igloo to pee, and you accidentally touch your penis to an iceberg on the tundra, it might get stuck.
And you'd end up with Tundra Dong.
That's the theory.
Yeah, so that's fun, and that's funny. I don't have a personal relationship to that, but it's funny to muse on.
There's always time. All right, let's see what else we got. Oh, now this one. You're gonna like this or not. I anagrammed the name you use, Gunnar Rohrbacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this first one. Read that.
Ghana Brunch Error. What they can't see is you holding out your arms and hands like sideways, like presto.
Like right?
Like right? Yeah.
Yeah, what do you get from Ghana Brunch Error? Nothing. You're getting nothing. Here's what I got. Here's what I got. I got a number of things. One, Ghana Brunch Error. It could be that they do brunch in Ghana at a different time than we do brunch in this country. And so you might show up either too early or too late.
I went more extreme.
For brunch in Ghana. What did you go to?
Like, I was like, I just thought of a person who was like supposed to meet me for brunch at like the Fig and Olive down the street on Melrose, but they went to Ghana instead. So like there was some miscommunication. Oh, I was in the wrong country.
They went to a different continent.
I went to a different
instead
continent.
Instead of the Fig and the Olive. Something. Text message got a little mixed up.
Right. Hmm. So there was a Ghana brunch error.
Or there could be something you order at brunch in Ghana that is just not the right thing for you.
Yeah, that could be.
All right.
That could be
terrible. Gunnar Rohrbacher, Ghana Brunch Error. This next one, this I kind of liked.
Chub Horn Arranger.
In the future, we might have an instrument called the Chub Horn. It's like a short trumpet that's, you know, chubbier than normal, like a pocket trumpet on steroids.
Yeah, but that's not what I think of when I think of the word chub.
You don't think about a chubby horn and somebody would arranging? There's an expert that arranges only the chub horns. What did you get?
No. Well, the chub makes me think of a boner. Oh. Like I've got a chub. So.
Okay, so fill in the blanks. Well, now what's happening?
A chub horn arranger. I guess it's like a sexy saxophonist who's like, you know, I'm going to play. I'm going to get you hard.
I see. Wait, when you said hard, it came out, there's a little different accent. I don't know. I just noticed. It was different than your normal voice.
I was maybe just putting emphasis. Yeah. I don't know if it was an accent.
I liked it.
Or an inflection.
It was
well,
a character work.
Because I channeled, a sexy jazz saxophonist.
The Chub Horn Ranger. I'm going to give you a chub.
Right? My music's going to be so effing sexy.
Yeah. You're going to get all chubbed up.
You're going to get chubbed up. See, that's what
chubbed up. That's a great verb.
That's what I. Yeah.
How you feeling? I'm feeling chubbed up.
Like, oh, okay, okay.
You're seven that. Up, uh-huh. And this is chubba.
Chubbed up.
Chubbed up.
It's a different soft drink altogether.
Oh, God. How about this last one?
Rough Barren Ranch. Wow.
I just thought there must be one of those somewhere.
It's rough and barren. I mean, I guess it's just the Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Gunnar Rohrbacher. Yeah. Rough Barren Ranch.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Kind of rolls off the tongue. See, when you say them together, it seems to mean something.
Yeah, but it's sad. Hmm. I mean, rough and barren. Like, who wants a ranch? Because I just think of the word ranch, but let's work backwards, right?
Just ranch.
Yeah. Just ranch. I'm like, oh, that's idyllic. I just immediately picture, you know, wide open spaces and, you know, farm animals and people riding horses. But then when you add rough and barren, then it's dry, there's no water, and it's hard living. So that's – I don't like that one.
What's that movie where the the woman is like a debutante in Kentucky on this big farm with beautiful horses and green grass and this Texas rancher, rich Texas rancher, comes to town and she marries him and he brings her back to his ranch. And it's a rough, barren ranch. It's like desolate. There's one house in the middle of this big dusty thing. Oh, we'll it's see. Like a some black and white movie.
It's a terrible. I don't know. Gone Giant with the Wind. Not Johnny Giant. Guitar. I, you know,
Giant
I don't know.
With the.
Oh, Giant. Is that Giant?
I don't know. Have you seen Giant?
No, I actually haven't.
Well, I'm not sure that I have either. Because it's like the least popular James Dean
movie.
There's
yeah,
only
yeah.
How many James Dean movies are there? Not that many.
I wouldn't be the person to ask.
But I mean, it's on the list because it's one of his movies.
Right, right, right.
It's just not that many.
Run of a handful, yeah.
Yeah, even though it's not great. It could be Giant. Could not be. All right, I have one more. Oh, no, wait, two more. Oh, boy. Woo! Okay, here you go. Now we're talking. So the next thing I anagrammed was Actors Comedy Studio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do we have here?
Outdo My Desiccators.
I have some pretty good desiccators. I thought yours might be better.
I challenge you. It's a challenge.
A duel.
A duel.
Desiccators.
Yeah. It's all right.
The winner gets a glass of water. All right. We're going to move on.
All right. I like the next one better.
Yeah. What's the next one?
Rosy Outcome Addicts.
Right.
That's what we are. That's what dreamers are. That's what artists are. I'm addicted to a rosy outcome.
Yes.
Whether it's actually manifests or I dream for it. I would wear it on a shirt comfortably.
Hmm. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. It's all a right. good name for like a softball team. Who are you guys? Oh, we're the Rosy Outcome Addicts. We're probably going to win. Bam! See what I did there? That was funny.
Yeah, okay. What's this last one?
Sidecar Custody Moot.
I had a vision of a married couple that had a motorcycle with a sidecar, and when they got divorced, they had a big argument about who should get the sidecar, but it really didn't matter.
That would be the summary of those words together.
Anything else?
No, I think that's probably about it.
All right. Car.
Yeah, no, that's
good. Not really all that
it's
interesting.
It's the best story you can get out of that.
Yeah, I just got an image about that. All right, here's the very last thing. I anagrammed Viva Liberace.
Okay.
And here's some good stuff. Mm-hmm. Number one.
Variable Vice.
I think that's got to be right down for this guy.
Yeah, that could have just been his name.
Variable Vice. Right? Yeah. He had a lot of vices. He enjoyed them all. He switched them around. He kept them in a good rotation.
I don't know if it was a good rotation, but it was a rotation.
Yeah, rotation. I think there's a lot of rotation.
Okay.
Variable Vice. So that's accurate.
Yes. Number two is Cavalier Vibe.
Didn't he give off like a kind of swarthy, masculine, cavalier, devil-may-care vibe? He had that.
Yeah, he did. I think, you know, the facade that he created so as to, you know, since he couldn't be out when he started his career, had kind of a glib. There was something kind of cold about it because he wasn't being completely authentic.
Right.
So
that smile.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like an ermine collar on something. I remember something with like a big fur collar.
Oh, furs I'm for sure. days.
He did all of that. I'm doing things with hands. But
yes,
you know.
And it's time gone by. They had a Liberace museum in Las Vegas. I don't think they have it anymore. But yeah, all of his collection was on display, and it was something at which to marvel.
Yeah. And the last one.
A civil beaver. It's like, I just think of like a dutiful beaver who's like, you know.
A dutiful beaver. Yeah.
Right? Like on point with the dam. Like that beaver is making sure that the dam holds.
Right.
Because he's
like a civil engineer beaver.
Yeah.
Not civil as in polite.
Yeah, no. I went to kind of like a governmental, like you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Professional
civil
grade.
Beaver, like a civil engineer.
Like a civil servant, civil engineer. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's where my head went.
So now he's got like hard hat and a safety vest and clipboard.
Yeah. And a badge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Laminated name tag. Civil beaver. Yeah. Okay. Now I get it. Now I get who you're talking about there. You know, last week I had Phyllis Katz here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A very good friend of mine. Love great. Phyllis Katz.
If you're listening to the show now, which is actually later, she's going to be on soon, which is actually tomorrow, but not for the people who are listening.
Yes. Yeah. Understood.
Anyway, she was in a movie called Zombievers, which was about, you know, a group of ridiculously attractive young people who go for a camping trip next to a lake, and there's been some toxic spill, and the beavers have been drinking the toxic waste, and they turn into bloodthirsty zombies.
Uh-huh.
So it's a zombie beaver movie.
Zombievers.
Zombiever.
All right, I'm going to have to look that up.
I think I just needed to balance it out with a civil beaver.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I didn't have to just be thinking about beavers as zombies.
Understood. I'm just going to text Phyllis when we're done, zombievers, and you just see what she says back. Yeah.
Well, we've wasted all the time that we had to waste here.
All right.
Talking about tundra dong and getting chubbed up.
So that's the summary of our conversation, is that, a couple of dick jokes at the end from anagrams?
That pretty much, unless you want to also include the prostate exam.
Oh, no. That's all the bodily functions I can handle.
Let's end on a high note. This book, The Funniest Scenes in the World, Volume 1, there are 50 scenes in there.
There's 25.
25.
A piece, yeah. And then Volume 2 will have 25.
We'll have 25. Okay. It seemed a little slim for 50, so I'm glad I asked.
It originally started as one collection, yeah, but it just was absolutely too large when we put
it. No, I think this is a good size for a book. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Funniest Scenes in the World, Volume 1, 25 original TV scenes for actors to practice, workshop, and shoot real, R-E-E-L, footage by Gunnar Todd Rohrbacher. You can get this book on Amazon.
Yeah.
Hello, I'd like to thank my guest, the always entertaining Gunnar Rohrbacher. That's still you, right?
Still, yeah.
For coming in this week. If you'd like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. I haven't sold any of those.
I was going to ask.
They're $20, which, you know, if you get them custom printed, it's a lot of money for a coffee mug.
It's a good mug. I received one from you as a gift, which I appreciate and value. Sure. It hangs in my office and I use. And let me just plug Denzel's mug. It's a good mug. Mm-hmm. And the Comedy Death Star logo is fun.
It is. Right. My goal is to have this podcast get big enough that we get a cease and desist letter from Disney saying you can't be using our Comedy Death Star name or image.
I often think about what I can do that's a bold enough move to have a legal representative contact me.
Yeah, well, I think if we hit that milestone, we can just leverage that right up.
You can.
Dylan Vigil, you know him, is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. Someday I'm going to have to bring him by.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. That's Chester. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.